Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Thanks for tuning in to the Money Tree Podcast, your source for investing and money matters. I'm your host, Andrea Trevelyan from TakeASmartStep.com. This week, we are going to be talking about commodity investing for the individual investor, whether you should, shouldn't be, and what you need to know about it. Before we get into our interview, though, we have a short spot from our new sponsor, MoneyQuiz101.com.
Trading involves risk of loss and is not appropriate for everyone.
We've never met, but I know a secret about you, something your own mother doesn't know. I know the number one profit-killing mistake you're currently making with your trading. Hi, I'm Bill Polis, and I created an unusual 15-second quiz that can pinpoint and eliminate your number one mistake so you can potentially risk as little as $25 to make $100. Find out how at MoneyQuiz101.com. For the next few days, it's free. Just go to MoneyQuiz101.com. That's MoneyQuiz101.com.
And now let's get into our interview. Today's guest is David Stein, who is the host of Money for the Rest of Us, which is a weekly personal finance show. He also runs the Money for the Rest of Us Hub, an online educational platform on money, how it works, and how to invest it. Previously, he was the chief investment strategist and chief portfolio strategist at Fund Valuation Group, a $35 billion institutional investment advisor. At FEG, he co-led the 20-person research team and managed assets for endowments, foundations, and financial planners. Thanks for joining us today, David.
Great. Thanks, Andrea.
All right. So today we are going to get into the topic of commodity investing for the individual investor. So I think before we dig too deep into this topic, we need to clarify what exactly is a commodity. So, David, what do you consider a commodity when you're talking about this?
Commodities are typically sort of the basic elements that are used to make things. And there's really three branches. So there's energy. Example of energy commodities would be oil, natural gas, gasoline. There's metals, which include traditional gold and silver, but also more industrial metals like copper and zinc. And then agricultural products are also considered commodities, sugar, soybeans, corn, and wheat. And so those are the different types.
All right, excellent. What are the different ways that you can go about investing in these commodities?
Well, here's where it gets a little tricky, because your average individual investor thinks, well, I'm going to invest in commodities. So they see the drop in oil and they say, I'd like to buy oil. Well, the reality, you can't go buy oil unless you're super huge and can rent a tanker. There's just no way to buy oil and store it at home. And so you have to do it through some type of investment vehicle. So through an exchange-traded fund, or an exchange-traded note, or directly in the futures market. Now, even with these exchange-traded notes or exchange-traded funds with oil, they're not investing in oil either. They're investing in oil futures. And later in the show, I'll explain some of the nuances of oil futures, because it's not as simple as oil price goes up, you make money having invested in oil futures. There's a number of different nuances that I'll address. But ultimately, the main ways to invest in commodities is exchange-traded funds, exchange-traded notes, and futures.
Okay. With the exception you could make of the segment of metals that you actually can physically hold, like gold and silver.
Well, exactly, which I should have mentioned, because that's how I've done a show recently on how to invest in gold. And gold is the one. It's the exception, and silver, in the sense that if you go buy an ETF with gold, it actually, there's a trust, and it goes and buys the gold itself. So it definitely holds it. As an individual investor, you can do the same thing. And I actually, that's my preferred way. If I invest in gold, and if we get later in the show, I'll say, well, I haven't invested in gold yet. But when I do, I'll be investing in gold coins because I like the idea of holding this commodity separate from the financial market. So I can store it in a safe deposit box or somewhere else. And if we have some type of financial breakdown, some big virus that takes out the financial system, there's an asset that's separate from paper assets. And so gold is one way you can do it. Maybe I should point out with exchange-traded notes, they're not – no exchange-traded notes actually holds what they say they're investing in. And so an ETF, if you buy a stock ETF, it goes out and buys the stock. But an exchange-traded note is actually a debt instrument issued by the sponsor of the exchange-traded note. So it's really a debt, and it's unsecured debt. So they promise to pay a return that equals whatever their specified index is, but it essentially is unsecured debt. And a quick example of that is I owned right during the financial crisis, a exchange-traded note sponsored by Bear Stearns that was tied to Master Limited Partnerships. And so they were paying a return. And Master Limited Partnerships are basically vehicles that invest in energy infrastructure. So it's sort of like commodities, but more energy infrastructure, the oil and the pipelines. And so this note was tracking the returns of MLPs. Well, lo and behold, Bear Stearns went bankrupt. And so we're kind of scrambling, wondering, well, technically they shouldn't be paying this note, and which is one of the risks. Fortunately, JP Morgan took it over and things went fine, but it's something to consider. Whenever you invest, you really need to understand the vehicle. Are you really invested in it, or is there some other avenue that, or something that's getting in the way to actually owning the particular holding? And with exchange-traded notes, there are a number of commodity exchange-traded notes. They're not invested in commodities. That is essentially unsecured debt promising to pay a set return tied to whatever commodity futures do.
Well, that leads me actually perfectly into the next question I had is, what are the risks of investing in commodities?
Well, there's a number of them. And let's specifically talk about investing in commodities through futures contract, which is by and large how most people will invest, whether you invest through an ETF or even the ETN that is promising to pay a return of commodities. Again, they're going to base it on the return of futures index. And so when you invest in futures, you're not betting in the actual spot price. So right now, oil is trading at $42 a barrel, roughly, I think, West Texas Intermediate crude. If you go into the futures market, you can't say, You don't make money if it goes from 42 to 43, because what you're betting on is not the current spot price, but the future spot price. So you can go out and buy an April contract, which right now is priced at closer to $48 a barrel. So even though oil prices are $42 a barrel, the future contract is at $48 a barrel. And so unless oil goes above $48 a barrel, you don't make money. And so what you're really doing when you're buying a commodity is you're anticipating that the market or investors have mispriced what they think the commodity will do in the future. And that's where it gets really confusing, in the sense that, if I think oil is going to go up, that's great. But if I think it's going to go up by July, it's got to go up more than $50 a barrel, because that's how the future market is priced. And so that is definitely one of the risks. And that's one of the drivers of returns for commodities. So when we talk about why would an individual invest in commodities, you need to understand what drives the return. The first return driver is the change in the future spot price, not the current price today. The other main driver is what's called, well, at the bottom is really there's a yield component, because when you buy a futures contract, it's a very leveraged position. So if you invest $10,000 in an ETF that's buying commodities futures, they don't need the entire $10,000 to get $10,000 worth of commodities exposure, because it's so leveraged. So they can buy a couple of futures contracts, and then the rest of the money gets invested in U.S. Treasuries or other safe investment interests. So when you're buying a commodity ETF or ETN, a portion of your return is simply the yield on the underlying collateral. The second portion of the return would be this change in the future spot price, whether the price has gone up what was already embedded in the contract. And then the third avenue of return is actually a little more complicated in what's called roll yield. And what roll yield is there is actually what's known as a future price curve. So if you look at the price of oil right now the spot price is 42. The April contract, I think, was like at 46 or 48. July is at 50. And so you have this upward sloping curve. And that type of curve is called, it's a positive curve, and that's what's called contango is the technical term for it. And here's where it gets a little challenging. If I'm a ETF manager I have all this money in that wants to benefit from oil, I have to choose which future contract to buy. I can buy the current month contract, I can buy out the April or the May or the June contract. Well, again, there are embedded expectations in that contract. So the June contract, as I mentioned, is at 50. If the spot price doesn't change, so if oil stays at 42, what that means is I'm going to lose on my contract every time I roll it over because the spot price hasn't gone up to what the futures price is. And that's called a negative roll yield. And you see that if you actually look at the performance of ETF that tracks oil and other commodities, they don't track the spot price exactly because every month, and that's the situation you have in oil right now with this negative roll yield, they're losing money as they roll over that future contract. And then the final way you make money with commodities, well, let me go back. The ideal situation is when you have a downward sloping futures curve. So the current spot price is greater than the futures price, and that's called backwardation. And when you have that, that's a great time to own commodities because then every time you roll over your contract, you make money on it as the spot price or as the future price basically moves up to whatever the spot price is. And I recognize that's confusing. But on the other hand, commodities are confusing. And so if an individual wants to invest in commodities, you need to understand it's not so simple as, gosh, oil is down. I think it's going to rebound. There are these elements that drive return. The final element that drives return is really simple rebalancing. So there are broad-based commodity ETFs that will own some energy, they own metals, they own agriculture, and they will rebalance based on whatever happens, just like in your portfolio, you sell high, you buy low, they do the same thing. So there is a little bit of a rebalancing yield. So the main risk of commodities is people understand what they're investing in because they're investing in commodities futures. The other real risk, particularly for U.S. investors, is you need to understand the tax consequences because a number of these ETFs don't issue a traditional 1099, which makes taxes really simple if you're a U.S. investor. They issue a K-1, so they're treated almost like a private partnership. And funny story, just this last week, I've been applying for a mortgage against one of my rental properties, and I haven't applied for a mortgage in years. And one of the questions I got back from the loan officer that hadn't seen this very much, she asked me about all these businesses I owned because I had all these K-1s. And one of the businesses she asked about was this DBC commodities index business. I said, no, that's an ETF. That's what they do. They issue this K-1. And so and the problem with K-1s is it just makes taxes a little more complicated. So that's the other risk. And then the final risk is it's really hard to figure out which direction commodities are going. And there's no guarantee that, for example, commodities tend to run in what are known as super cycles. So the very, very long-term trends. And the most recent super cycle began in 1999 and really went through 2011. And what a commodity super cycle, what causes it is usually there's a jump in demand. And in this case, this most recent commodity super cycle was China. They have a voracious appetite for commodities and consume a significant portion of the world's commodities, 30-40% of certain segments. And so their economy was booming. Their desire for commodities was very strong. And then the producers, it takes a while to increase capacity. And so we had this commodity boom cycle that continued through 2008, which was really the peak. Then it sold off during the global recession, but then it rebounded. But commodities peaked in 2011. And what most people don't realize with commodities is they do tend to track, even as oil sells off, agricultural sells off to some extent because oil is a big component of that. And if oil's selling off, usually there's some type of drop in demand because of slowing economies. So that impacts industrial metals such as copper. And so we've been in a period for the past 3 years since 2011 where commodities are down. And there's no guarantee that, you know, my belief is we're sort of in a commodities bear market. And that could last 5, 10, 20 years. And so I'm not necessarily in a hurry to buy commodities. It's something people need to recognize. This is not your typical asset class, and they tend to move in very long-term trends.
Well, I think you actually, in my opinion, hit on one of the biggest risks is the correlation between all of them that not everybody understands. You know, so oil is tied to corn and all the others. And so you have to understand those dynamics. And unless you're in it every single day, it's really hard to stay on top of that stuff.
Well, right. I mean, the typical investor that buys commodities, they're doing it. And I had institutional clients who would buy it. They do it as a diversifier because when we talk about benefits, and I'll give you the one benefit, it does tend to move opposite the stock market. So we have these super cycles for commodities. They tend to do well when stocks aren't doing. So the last bear market of commodities started in 1981, went through 1999. Well, that also corresponded with the equities bull market. And so you do these long-term trends, they tend to move opposite. And so there is a diversification benefit to owning commodities. You just recognize that they can be very long-term trends and they can be very, very volatile. Because I didn't even talk about buying futures directly because I've done that. And the problem with buying futures directly, and I don't recommend this at all for individuals, I don't even do it anymore. It was more of a test, an experiment. Is they are extremely volatile, much more volatile than your potential return. And the thing about commodities markets is they trade throughout the day, right? So, yeah, they trade in the U.S., but if you buy a commodities futures, it's trading in Asia, it's trading in Europe, and so you have to put stop losses in so you don't get squeezed or it bounces above your price target because they're so leveraged, and they bounce around without any rhyme or reason. You know, much more than any asset class I've seen because they're so highly leveraged, because you know there's been accusations of manipulation in some of the commodities market, which wouldn't surprise me. So you have these huge jumps from day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute, that you can't really predict. And because it's so highly leveraged, you can get wiped. I've known people get wiped out buying commodities because they think it's easy. They think they can trade it. And the reality is the vast majority of people can't.
Well, and that actually brings up another risk in that if you are doing that, you have to understand that you're actually going up against the producers because a lot of them will buy futures as a hedge. And they have a lot more information about what's in stock and what's coming up. And, you know, you just when you don't have that information, it's hard to stay on the train for long. So,
well, exactly. So, right. So and not only the producers, but you're going up against hedge funds. I used to research hedge funds, and somebody that's good at trading commodities, they're making millions and millions of dollars in personal compensation working for a hedge fund. And they understand the patterns, they understand all the nuances, and even many of them don't do very good at it. But
yes.
You just yeah, you don't want to buy futures.
So with the benefit, you said diversity is a benefit. So why else would I – so we know we're not going to go buy an actual future. Why would I go buy an ETF in commodities? What benefit is it doing for me besides for diversifying my portfolio?
The main reason to own commodities besides diversification is they do well with unexpected inflation. And so they are a good inflation hedge, but not – and again, because you're buying a when you buy an ETF, it's based on the market's expectation for future prices. And so if the market is expecting inflation, then that will be reflected in the future prices of various commodities. So when the inflation comes in much higher than expectations, that's when commodities do well. And my favorite commodity for that is gold. Because gold, you don't have to worry about the future spot price of gold. You own gold. And gold does extremely well during periods when inflation expectations are high. And when inflation is coming in, when there's a lot of inflation or a lot of unexpected inflation, gold is a simple way to have exposure to commodities, and it has other unique elements to it, but it does do very, very well during periods of high inflation.
Okay, so if I am an individual investor and I want to get one of these benefits, where should I be doing that at? Is the ETF the best? Is it, where would you send somebody to invest in commodities?
If you want broad-based commodity exposure, so that it has exposure to energy, has exposure to gold or other industrial metals, has exposure to agriculture, there's a commodity ETF that's run by Deutsche Bank, and it's an ETF called DBC. And the reason why I like this ETF, and this is the same ETF we used to use for our institutional clients, is they have flexibility to decide, basically to try to eliminate this negative roll yield that I talked about. And so instead of, like some of the ETFs always, they just buy the front month contract. So every month they're rolling over the contract, and if there's negative roll yield, that hits the return or makes the return worse. But with DBC, this particular ETF, they actually have flexibility. So if they want to go buy a futures contract 8 months from now, they can do that. So they can adjust there when they buy it to try to minimize this negative roll yield. Now, when you look at the current futures curve of oil, there's no way to completely eliminate it. So they try to minimize the damage. But I like it because it's a broad-based ETF, and it's relatively inexpensive. Because a lot of these ETFs, I mean, they're not. You're paying 0.8, 0.9%. Because they can be – this is not – sort of a 3 or 4 basis point type stock ETF, they're making money on it. So you're paying upwards of 1% to get exposure to commodities. But it's not unreasonable, I guess, if you definitely want exposure. But buying it through this type of ETF, and there might be others that are more cognizant of, they have a little more flexibility, but the fact that they try to minimize negative roll yield, that it is so broadly diversified, so you get a benefit of some of this rebalancing that occurs, just the natural fluctuation between commodities within reason. That would be one way to do it. The other would be just buy gold coins. Or there's gold ETFs too. You could buy a gold ETF that just owns the physical gold, and that would be a way to do it.
So really you want to get into something that is not necessarily specific to one of the categories, or go gold and silver?
Yeah, I would, if I'm going to do commodities, because there are these super cycles, and because they broadly move together, the operative word is broadly, because there can be some differences, and I just like having a broad, because even within energy, right, these commodity ETFs, they'll own gasoline, they'll own Brent crude, they'll own light crude, and so they'll own natural gas. And so even within the energy sector, you get – I'm always a big believer to be as diversified as you can as possible. And that would be one argument, a contrarian argument, is just to own commodities in general, recognizing there's some of these negatives to it. But it is a clear diversifier. If somebody wanted to invest 4% or 5% of the portfolio for the long term, just for that period of unexpected inflation – it makes some sense, because the whole idea of unexpected inflation is nobody's sitting here predicting it. And I can't predict it. You can't predict it. So having that element makes a lot of sense, as long as you recognize they're volatile and that we appear to be in a somewhat of a downward bear market for commodities. But yeah, if somebody wants to own it, it can make some sense purely from the diversification and unexpected inflation benefits.
Well, you kind of touched on my last question, and that was, you know, should an individual investor even try a broad-based? Should they even be in commodities at all?
I think so. I mean, I think if you're running a diversified portfolio, it's just – it's another asset class. There's been studies that – I've done an earlier episode on Money Tree on modern portfolio theory and some of my concerns with modern portfolio theory. But one of the tenets of asset allocation is really the more diversified you are, the better you are. And just because it's so – I'm a firm believer one cannot predict the future. And so adding another element to your portfolio that has shown some negative correlation long term to stocks can be beneficial as long as people realize that there's – it's just not going to track the spot price or the current price of oil directly. There's these other elements to it. But I think so. Now, having said that, I don't own any commodities right now. Because I am not one. I like to invest as conditions change, and I call it investing on the leading edge of the present. And so if I see a downward price trend that's so severe, like I see in oil and commodities, I'm going to wait until it hits an extreme and reverses and at least appears to be an opposite trend. Now, most buy and hold investors – strategic asset allocation, they don't want to do that. And so in that case, commodities make sense. I don't own any right now. I own master limited partnerships, which is a way that I can participate in the build out of the energy boom that's occurring in North America. But that's much more like owning a toll booth because they get paid irrespective of what oil prices do because they're running oil through those pipelines. And so I like that because just because it's a very high yield play. So it's yielding 6-7%. And so it's a way to invest in energy without necessarily having to bet on the price of oil.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Where can people find you if they want more information?
Well, my podcast home is at moneyfortherestofus.net. And the podcast is Money for the Rest of Us. It's also on iTunes, or they can reach me via Twitter at JD Stein, or they can email me with questions, JD@jdavidstein.com.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Andrea.
Trading involves risk of loss and is not appropriate for everyone.
We've never met, but I know a secret about you, something your own mother doesn't know. I know the number one profit-killing mistake you're currently making with your trading. Hi, I'm Bill Polis, and I created an unusual 15-second quiz that can pinpoint and eliminate your number one mistake so you can potentially risk as little as $25 to make $100. Find out how at MoneyQuiz101.com. For the next few days, it's free. Just go to MoneyQuiz101.com. That's MoneyQuiz101.com.
Now we're going to move on to the panel discussion. This week we have with us Miranda Marquit from Planting Money Seeds, Joe Salcihi from Stacking Benjamins, and Andrew Sather from eInvesting for Beginners. How are we all doing this week?
Woo-hoo! Woo!
All right.
I got coffee. That makes it a great day.
Yeah, I'm on my fifth cup, I think, so it's one of those mornings.
That might be overdoing it.
No. It's not. I am not beyond my first pot. Going beyond a pot is overdoing it.
how many cups do you have in a pot? Like 8 or something?
Well, it depends on how big the size of the cup
is. That's what I was just going to say. I mean,
the coffee pot actually says like 12 on it. Uh-huh. Those aren't.
But you'll take that dare.
I've done it before. That's nothing. okay, so on to commodities. So my first question for you guys is, do you own any commodities? Let's start with you, Miranda.
I do, and it's killing me. Well, I don't actually own commodities. I'm investing in an ETF, in a gold ETF, which is not the same thing as actually owning commodities. I'm just exposed to commodities because, of course, with the gold ETF, you don't actually own the underlying investment. But I'm exposed to gold. And as we know, gold has not been doing well this year, and it is dragging down my entire Grow Your Dough portfolio. And by this point, Joe may even be ahead of me now. I have been kicking his little butt all over the place last year and this year, and now he might finally be ahead of me.
That's some serious smack talk.
You know it.
All right, so Joe, do you have any commodities?
Well, I've sent past episodes that I was one of the people that David talks about, right, that went in there and bought oil without knowing what the heck I was doing, buying the commodity instead of buying one of the companies and not understanding how the contracts work, and I thought he did a great job of explaining that. I did make money. In fact, I sold off a piece of it, actually, after making about 6% in a 3-week period, which I thought was fantastic. So, but I own that. In the past, I've owned a lot of natural resources. You know how David talked about back testing? We back tested when I was a financial advisor, natural resources in portfolios. And it was neat to see the calming effect, even though natural resources by themselves are not a conservative investment. Because of the negative and close to no correlation with just the stock market in general, it was a great diversifier, just a little bit like, you know, pepper in the chili to calm an aggressive portfolio down a little bit. So I've owned a lot of natural resources in the past.
Well, I don't think you're making your chili right then, because it's supposed to have a lot of pepper, not a little pepper.
I have a very bland palate, so just a little goes a long way. Okay, I want to taste my food, right?
Andrew, do you have any commodities?
So I don't invest in commodities, you know, in the futures market or anything like that, but I do like to get exposure to them through stocks, and I think there's a lot of great stocks out there that, you know, that use commodities as products, and you can benefit from those. I think it's really, what's really interesting about commodities is it kind of runs everything. So, you know, David talked about how you can get a good correlation, a negative correlation against the stock market by investing in commodities. And so not only do you get that aspect, but you get to feel like you're on top of everything that's going on. A lot of the headlines that you'll see in financial markets have to do with commodities, and a lot of things start with commodities and then become reflected in the stock market. So if you can kind of master the first part, the commodities part, you can profit from the developments as they happen further on the way. And I think things like ETFs and individual stocks are a great way to, as Joe likes to say, add some pepper to your portfolio.
Excellent. Well, I don't own directly commodities. I do kind of the stocks, you know, if I want to buy into an area. But the biggest reason that I don't buy commodities, and this will play into how I answer a lot of the other questions as we're going on, is my husband is a commodity trader. So I don't buy any commodities because part of our livelihood is dependent upon them. So if oil tanks and his, you know, he was going the wrong direction and all of our personal stuff tanks, that's not a good combo. So going with the 10% rule, no commodities for me. Yeah. So one of the commodities that we kind of talked a lot about was gold. And I would love to hear everybody's take on gold. I know we've touched briefly in past episodes on it, but let's really dive into gold. So let's start with you, Miranda, again.
Oh, boy. Well, since gold is destroying my portfolio, I don't have happy feelings about it. No. So the problem I have with gold and the issue that I have with gold is we have this weird idea that for some reason it's intrinsically valuable and it's real money, you know, in quotes, real money. And for some reason we have this idea that gold is this base of real money, and it's really not. It's just like everything else. The value is perceived. The value is set according to demand. The value is set according to how we think about what's going to happen next. So the value of gold is just as flexible as everything else. And one of my favorite books is called Making Money, and it's by Terry Pratchett. And it's a satire. And if you're a fantasy fan like I am, you understand Terry Pratchett, and he's hilarious, and it's funny, and it's a satire of this guy who goes to run the bank, and he said, well, we don't need gold to run the bank. What is gold worth? And to paraphrase, basically, he's like, if you're stranded on a desert island, gold is worthless. On a desert island, the medium of exchange is the potato. If you have a potato, you can have a meal. You got a butter and a pinch of salt, and you've got a meal anywhere. You can plant that potato and grow new potatoes. But gold is worthless on a desert island. And so it was just kind of a fun little riff on it that he did. But it made, you know, it makes you think. You're like, really, what is the true value of gold? Is it really intrinsically valuable? Does it have this inherent value? And no, it doesn't. It's only valuable because we think it's shiny and it's easy to mold into jewelry and it's easy to, you know, mold into bullion and it doesn't rust. Oh, good for gold. So anyway, there's my rant.
Good rant. I liked that rant. Joe, what's your take on gold?
Speaking of rant, let's talk to Joe. So I was a wedding DJ in college, and as a wedding DJ, you had to play Bob Seger's Old Time Rock and Roll, right? I had to play it.
Right. Yeah.
And so I listened to Bob Seger every Saturday of the year at a wedding in some VFW hall at 145 decibels. I hate that song. I can't stand that song, but it's because of my experience. I have the same feeling about gold. And the reason is 16 years as an advisor, people would walk into my office and immediately say, I think we should buy a lot of gold. And I'd take my pen and I'd want to put it straight into my eye because gold, as David said, has these long, you know, there's these macro cycles that go for a long period of time where gold does absolutely nothing. Why do I want to have an investment in my portfolio that does nothing for a long time? And then when it goes, like it went a few years ago, it goes through the roof in a hurry, right? And then it does nothing for a long period of time again. So if you're smart enough to know when that time is that gold's going to go through the roof, well, you know, good for you. Gold for me is not something I go near.
And I don't know if you've ever seen the research, but there, it's something like gold, if you actually look at it over the past 100 years, literally is just inflation. It's more like an inflation hedge.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. Andrew, what's your take on gold?
Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned some of the past episodes we've done. If you go moneytreepodcast.com/37, you got all three of our take on gold with the last episode. And then me and Joe went on a good rant, moneytreepodcast.com/24 about gold. I'm going to play devil's advocate right now because we can't all have the same opinion right now.
What?
So there's a few things about gold that does make it very valuable. Number one, it's been the most accepted form of currency if you date the longest, if you go back as far as you can in history, even back to the time when we were fighting with swords and shields and you had people, the medieval times, that was how they viewed their currency, was with gold. Nowadays, obviously, things are changed and we have many different currencies in the world. But what makes gold so valuable is that there's a limited supply. So, you can perceive gold any way that you want, and that's what makes it valuable. But you could also say that the same thing about the dollar, the yen, the euro. It's nothing. It doesn't have an intrinsic value, but because the majority of a country sees it as valuable, that's what gives it its value. And so with gold, I think it's a combination of the history, and then you also have the fact that it has a limited quantity, so a government can't print it out of oblivion like the dollar. Can lose value very quickly if we just print millions and billions and trillions of it. Whereas gold, because there's a limited quantity, the reason why we've seen it rise so much is because as governments have inflated their debt levels, the proportion of that to the supply of gold in the world has risen. So that being said, you know, there is value in gold, but I don't see it as an investment. I talked about in last episode, I like to invest for cash flow. And so I think gold makes a nice hedge if you want to do a little percentage of your portfolio in gold to hedge against a crisis or anything like that. But as an investment, I don't even own any gold myself. I have a very long-term outlook and I'm going completely for growth and cash flow. So maybe someone who has a portfolio that they want to keep intact might look more into gold than someone who's trying to build a portfolio.
Great. One of the things that he had mentioned is one of the benefits of investing in commodities is for inflation hedging. So what do you guys think is an alternative, or if there's a better way to pledge? Oh, holy crikeys. Is there a better way to hedge for inflation than commodities? Let's just keep going right through the same line. Miranda?
Well, yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, stocks can be a hedge against inflation. Investing in your own business can be a hedge against inflation. Owning rental properties can be a hedge against inflation because you can keep raising rents. So there's a lot of other things that can be considered a hedge against inflation. I guess gold is basically your hedge against complete dollar collapse. And if you're going to have a complete dollar collapse, there are things, as I mentioned in a previous episode, that I would much rather have, like ammo and fishing tackle and my food storage and my camping gear. So I would rather have those things than gold in the event of a complete dollar collapse. But there are other things that you can use to help you beat inflation in the long run. Gold doesn't have to, commodities don't have to be the only things. Oil, agricultural futures, all of that kind of stuff. There are other things you can use as hedges against inflation as well. So you don't necessarily have to turn to commodities if you don't feel comfortable with it or if you don't think that it fits into your plan.
Joe?
Well, just to put a point on what Miranda said about stocks, you know, I'm young enough and retirement is far enough away. A lot of my goals are long-term goals, that the best way to beat inflation is – my goal is not to meet inflation. My goal is to beat it, because if I just meet inflation, I'm going to have to save into something that meets inflation dollar for dollar, whatever lifestyle I want at that time, right? So if I want to live a $50,000 lifestyle later on and inflation's 3% and I have an investment that only performs at 3%, I have to save $50,000 for every year. And if I live for 30 years, that's a ton of money. So I need my money to beat it. Well, stocks over the short term might get hammered by inflation, but over the long term, if the company's going to be profitable, they have to find a way to make money in an environment. And the way they do is in an inflationary environment, they will raise prices, right? And they'll find a way for the company to still bring in a profit that'll make the stock go up. But stocks beat inflation over long periods of time, not magically. It actually is math. If a company's going to profit, they have to do the same thing you and I have to do. They have to kill inflation. So I like the two places that reliably smoke inflation are stocks and REITs.
REITs.
Those two areas historically have an index that averages around the 10% mark. And so I'm going to go with stocks and REITs.
Excellent. That's actually one of the reasons I love dividend investing, is because, you know, the company's not stagnating. You know, they're raising prices, they're growing, and just naturally goes with inflation. So I agree, Joe.
Wow.
Should we write that down in history right now?
It happened today. Drop the mic.
Andrew, what's your take?
Well, why not combine all three? Let's get a dividend growing company that invests in commodities and watch it grow for the long term. You know, a couple examples of that right off the bat. You have Chevron. I think they've grown their dividend 15 plus years. ExxonMobil is famous for growing their dividend over 30 years. So you have these companies where you can not only be exposed to commodities, but also get all the benefits of individual stocks. I think individual stocks are a fantastic hedge against inflation, especially you just think logically. If a company has a product and if dollars are going higher, this company can raise their prices. So they're not affected by inflation. So their earnings will actually be helped by inflation because their prices rise as inflation rises. So if you can get a company like an ExxonMobil, like a Chevron, there's plenty other examples. And what's nice about owning the individual companies over an ETF, if you buy these individual companies, those dividends grow every year. And so you might buy something 10 years later, have a dividend that's basically yielding you 12, 15, 20% on your original investment. Whereas you don't get that with an ETF. You get the combination of all the dividends at once. But since you don't own the particular company as their dividends grow, you're not getting that compounding. So I think why not combine all three? Let's get dividend growing commodities.
That's a great point. I love Chevron, by the way. That's in my portfolio too, Andrew. But what did you think about David talking about pipelines?
Yeah, I think that's a good play too. I haven't looked at them personally. I know I have. There's a couple of stocks I've actually recommended where if you guys remember back in the gold rush, you had people moving to California. They were trying to get gold, and a lot of people were getting wealthy overnight. But the real wealth was actually made by people who sold the tools to the gold miners. So it wasn't the gold miners themselves. It was these people who were selling pickaxes and various mining equipment. And those are the ones who got really wealthy. And so in the same token, you can invest in commodities. You can go for these suppliers, things like pipelines, things like equipment, all these different things. Like
drillers?
Drillers, yeah. Stock ticker NOVs is a good example. I've suggested them in the past. And there's other different companies like that who basically support the major commodity players. And if you see a commodity boom, you'll see all the companies that support that commodity also boom along with it.
Well, but I think if you're looking at like the oil suppliers, the pipelines are kind of your most stable, because like even the equipment for the drilling rigs and everything like that, well, those projects are getting canceled right now because the margins are eroding in oil. What is still in place is the contracts that the pipelines have. It's a very different scenario. So they're stable for a lot longer periods because they basically do these contracts that the oil companies sign for, multiple years. Whereas if I'm building the drilling rig, well, a bunch of oil companies just canceled their projects. So there you go. So ultimately, here's the question I'm going to we'll end this with is, should the individual investor be in commodities? And let's approach this from the point that literally they're in a commodity, whether it's futures or a gold ETF or whatever that is. And if they should be, what would you recommend that they do? Miranda?
Well, I think that if you want to invest in a commodity and it's part of your asset allocation plan, I think that it can make sense to invest in something like gold or oil futures or do an ETF, because it's a little bit easier to manage, even though you do have to worry about contango, but that's something for another day. But I think if it's something that you're interested in and you want to play around with it and do, like 5% of your portfolio, or if you're really feeling the risk tolerance, maybe 10% of your portfolio. Yeah, I think it can make sense. But if it was a choice, kind of like what Joe was saying, it was a choice between some sort of a commodity type investment or a real estate investment trust, which will pay good dividends plus give you exposure to real estate, I would go with the REIT every time. So, once again, personal finance is personal. So figure out what matters to you and do that.
Excellent. Joe?
Well, there's never a never, but, speaking to a fairly wide audience, I would just say no. I agree with David. There's so much that people don't understand about how contracts make money, how these things make money, that it's much easier to go the way that Andrew's talking about. If I like oil, buy an oil stock. I understand how a company makes money. When I've got not just the price of oil going up and down, but just the way that commodity contracts get rolled over, that makes my head explode. And if I'm the average guy, I want to keep it more simple than that. So I'm going to go with E.
Andrew?
I'm going to go with E too. with the caveat, like, if you want the firepower, here it is. So I found this one website that was just hands down what I think the best resource for commodities. It's called stockcharts.com. And what's nice about it is you can overlay and you select which charts you want, and you can look at like 10 or 12 all on one screen. And so it makes it nice if you want to check commodities every day, see how they're moving. Stockcharts.com is a great place to do that. And so back in January, I wrote a blog post called Investing in Commodities, Who, What, Where. And in there, I linked up the stockcharts.com, and I also shared the most important commodity tickers you should be looking at if you want to stay on top of it. So you have like ticker symbol CRB. That's the index for – it's called Thomson Reuters / Jefferies. It's the index for all commodities. And then you have the basic agricultural, energy, industrial metals, livestock, precious metals. You can even look at the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield to see how the dollar is doing. You can look at light crude, Brent crude, copper, gold. Those are all things that I wrote in the blog post. And so if you lay out those charts and you look at them all on the same screen, you can see where their trends are. What the, David said, you know, these long-term trends do happen in commodities. And that's, if you can learn how to identify them, you can do a lot of great things. And just be generally aware, like if you can depend on, oh, I can look at this chart and understand, yeah, oil is going down, then you can understand where the source for all these news articles that say oil is dropping. You can understand that and intuitively learn it for yourself. And so I also talk about in the blog post how to read things like moving averages and things like crossovers, and it helps you identify a long-term trend. I'm not saying go be a trend follower or, you know, day trade commodity futures, but if you can learn general long-term trends and education in that regard, then I think, you know, why not learn it and become a more well-rounded investor?
All right. And last but definitely not least, my take on it is
definitely not least.
Definitely best.
I would say the individual investor should not, for two specific reasons. One, I would not ever go up against my husband. So like me going in and pretending like I know what's going on in the futures market. I've seen, I mean, his desk has like four computer screens. He's got a wall of TVs above him. He's got, you know, the $10,000 Bloomberg station. He talks to plants all the time. Like just the amount of knowledge that the people who are in the industry have is unmatched, that you just can't get anywhere else for commodities. So there's no way I'm ever going up against him. Number two is one thing that a lot of people don't keep in mind is that our everyday lives are exposed to commodities, and so are the stocks that we're buying. So, you know, like let's say you own, you know, Conagra Foods. Well, they are dealing with commodities and the food prices and the risks all the time, and they're actually hedging that stuff, you know, behind the scenes. So it's not that you don't have it. It's just kind of in different formats. With that being said, if you find that you truly want to add a small component, I would actually recommend you go with one of the broad funds. There's commodity funds out there that do it all. They'll do gold, silver, oil futures, all of it. And I think that's a more well-rounded play to let those experts go in and pick out what's hot, what's not, and go from there. So.
And really, I love that you mentioned silver, and we probably should have mentioned it earlier. If you're like really, really jonesing for a precious metal, silver is probably a better deal than gold. It's less expensive and it has more room to grow. It has a lot of really good industrial use, as well as really good like jewelry use.
Hey, and you know what, Miranda? In 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to have a guest talking about silver.
Sweetness.
That is this my next interview. Andrew Channon, who runs the Pure Funds Junior ISE Silver Fund, so he'll be our guest.
Cool.
Well, there you go. We can learn more about that there. Well, I would like to thank everybody for joining us today. If you have any questions, comments, anything, we would love to hear from you. You can either come over to our site, moneytreepodcast.com, or you can leave us a review and a comment over on iTunes. We would appreciate that. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.